We continue now with a look at the science behind a whole system's view of reality and how that affects you as we talk with the president of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, James O'Dea. James was the director of the Washington, D.C. office of Amnesty International, the respected human rights organization, and also served as head of the SIVA Foundation. Today, he heads the Institute of Noetic Sciences, or IONS, and joins us to talk about the organization, the nature of their whole system's perspective, and his life of service. I definitely want to talk about service before you leave. I find that critical. For those who missed our earlier chat, can you briefly tell us about the history of IONS and maybe what noetic means?
Yes, indeed. I mean, it is an organization that was birthed out of an astronaut's experience, his moment when of returning from walking on the moon, where he experienced oneness, and a very important moment in our experience, really, where, you know, we know from mystics that they experienced this state of oneness, to try to see how science could understand that state of oneness, that state of connectivity between all things that we now begin to know more and more in the science, in modern science, of the absolute connectedness and interpenetration of all life forms and all being. And noetics is a word which comes from the Greek word nous, and it really means intuitive spiritual mind, the part of the mind that won't be limited by the rational mind. And in that whole mind, as you say, when we talk about whole systems, there is a mysterious relationship between our own individual experience and a collective mind, a collective awareness. And I would say that we're really trying to begin to understand that relationship between the individual and the collective intelligence.
Consciousness science, is that an adequate way of describing IONS?
Yes, yeah. Indeed.
Okay. Well, to get a sense of science and consciousness and how one might begin to figure that out, and also to give the listener a sense of, you know, what kind of scientific, you know, when the average person thinks of science, they think of a person in a white jacket with beakers, you know, mixing things, and occasionally there's an explosion, I guess, I don't know, you know, our experience from science in high school. And, maybe instead of looking at the scientist in the laboratory with the white jacket and the beakers, we can think about the average person thinking about someone, and then moments later that person calls. And it's totally by chance, or else we think it is. And yet that is the beginning of one of the latest experiments that was conceived or fostered by Rupert Sheldrake, who has a connection with your organization and is one of the most respected scientists in terms of this whole systems or organismic paradigm. So why don't you tell us a bit about Sheldrake, that notion, and how IONS might assist Rupert or other people doing this kind of science?
Yes, Rupert Sheldrake, who is a fellow of the Institute, is known for his work around morphogenetic fields, this notion that there is the capacity within the memory of creation to hold the resonant memory of all patterns, and that field theory is extremely important. We know this now, so that when something happens, when a pattern or an event happens, we think it's just happening, you know, in an isolated, I'm doing it here and that's all. If you begin to think in terms of resonant field theory, that pattern is rippling out, and if there are other patterns that are any way close to it, they may start to resonate together. And so that we can begin to look at, you know, the formation of evolution and genetics as a whole series of repetitive, interpenetrating, connective, resonant patterns, then if you're thinking of thought itself as a wave pattern in this ocean and sea of other resonances, and it catches, you know, glimpses or connective with other wave patterns, you have suddenly what people call synchronicities and this, you know, miraculous sense of connection. That's one dimension of what Rupert contributes. Edgar Mitchell himself continues to contribute another dimension, of which we call quantum holography, a difficult concept, but one that people should start listening in and tuning into, because the quantum reality, the quantum basis of reality, which we now know is, you know, those the energy system underneath all matter, is going to become the basis of future technologies. There's already a quantum holographic MRA machine being developed. Quantum computers will be a part of our future technologies. And we know that quanta can hold quintillia of information. So you begin to get, you know, in Edgar's work and Rupert Sheldrake's work, a confirmation that nature stores vast amounts of energy and vast amounts of information and patterns, and is not bound by local space-time relationships. And to us, to the rational mind, is deeply paradoxical, because it seems to be able to be in both places at the same time and not to be bound by the things that, you know, we here in the studio are bound by.
So to give a sense to the rational mind, or someone listening who thinks, what is this person talking about? Walt Whitman said, you know, if you want to find me again, look under your boot soles. And Jesus said, he's coming back. I mean, a second coming. So in a sense, that second coming may not be seeing Jesus at the local cafe, but it may, that resonance, that Christ consciousness coming back and resonating and manifesting and growing. Is that a good description?
Well, what I would say is that from a scientific perspective, being is also back, because we now know so much more. If we know about the atom and the subatomic reality, we also know more about the biochemical reality. And Candace Pert wrote a book called Molecules of Emotion, and Daniel Goleman wrote about emotional intelligence. And now we begin to say to you, you know, the whole science of the relationship between your emotions and your biochemistry and your health are so deeply intertwined that unless you are releasing unforgiveness, it is going to block certain parts of your awareness. It's actually going to be deeply damaging to your body. So that love, gratitude, forgiveness are profound aspects of consciousness, the being itself. So the big journey here, in when you talk about whole systems, the big journey is, you remember, you know, maybe when you were growing up, you know, how dominant ideologies still were. Hey, you get the ideology, you get the party view or the party platform, or you get the system of ideas, and that's it. And you go push the ideas. Well, the ideas are collapsing because they are not strong enough to hold the wholeness of consciousness. You have to include the being, the heart. Your whole emotional system has to be right in there to access the deepest mirrors of consciousness. So, you know, if you've got a great theory about how the world should operate and how everybody should change, I ask you out there to consider where your heart is, where your being is, because it's in the expansion of being that I think we will see the emergence of the new coming, the second coming, the greater awakening, because we've integrated, we've created a new level of wholeness between mind and body and heart and spirit. And healing comes from the word to make whole. I think healing is a central motif from the new science around healing, cancer remission, the relationship between mind and body, and now I think the beginning of a conversation around social healing. What does it mean to heal the social body? What are the wounds that we carry in the social psyche that we have not attended to? The intergenerational transfer of wounds and the capacity of people to heal each other. I lead some dialogues called Compassion and Social Healing, and I have recently been with, you know, Gottfried Leif and Mary Rothschild, a man who was a member of the Hitler Youth when he was 13, and a woman who's the daughter of Holocaust survivors. The healing, loving, compassionate work they have done, the surrendering of the perpetrator-victim roles into a new sense of we can go beyond these vast and deep historical traumas to recreate new possibilities and see new possibilities for humanity. That's deep in the work of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, because we look at human capacities, extended human capacities.
We're talking with James O'Dea, president of the Institute of Noetic Sciences. I'm Paul Nelson. This program is a tremendous opportunity for me to learn time and time again, learn about my own ignorance, but learn. And it's just, I want to end begin every question with wow, because I'm just wowed by the concepts that you're bringing up and the profundity of them. So thank you so much. What led you to a life of service? It's not the average person who chooses the path that you've chosen. And yet, it seems to me that something deep inside all of us is a desire to serve.
Yes, and I think service got hijacked by the morally righteous crew, and it was sort of promoted as that which we are obligated to do for others, that, you know, this notion that it's the should, the ought to's, you know, dimension of service. And that is not what is attracted to me in service. It is the releasing of possibilities. You know, it is the life force itself. You know, life serves us. And I think it goes back into that conversation around human capacities, that it's when the life force is expanding, it wants to connect. It wants to integrate with other life forms. When it's contracting, it's isolating itself out. And so service is that path that says we are connected, and how do we connect with each other? And I've also grown up and matured. We talked a little bit about my youth earlier on, and when I was a teenager in London, I received an award as the Teenager of the Year for work I did highlighting the plight of senior citizens in London. And so that service thing was there early. And the head of the welfare services in London wrote me a letter, because there was a lot of media around this, saying, you know, you should please come to my office and we can discuss this without the media present. And I wrote him a letter saying, you know what you have to do, and when you do it, I will meet you. And of course, that is the arrogance of youth that I now look back and go, I wasn't serving him very well. And one of the things in the Institute of Noetic Sciences that we say is a capacity, it's a very advanced capacity, but it's a capacity to hold the other without separating them out of your field of experience. It's called the non-dual consciousness. And I do think that in the peace movement, for example, you know, when it gets totally angry and denigrating of those it opposes, it's simply a part of a polarity. It is not, it hasn't moved into the non-dual place of saying, I can respect and try to see the dignity of the other, and in fact go to a more essential level. And I think that's the deepest service we can do at this point, is to find common ground. Is, you know, in that image I had of expanding the being and connecting, it's to find our commonality with those we disagree with, and not to compound these hells and dungeons of the psyche that cast people out into some monster status or some irredeemable place where all we have to do is extinguish them. That, I'm afraid, is not going to help us grow and evolve.
Your phrase that you used in one of your interviews was, we must humanize rather than demonize, which I think says it really well. And you also say in one of those interviews, the path of service seems to evoke every kind of spiritual, psychological, and sociological challenge. You pick a life of service, and the universe finds a way to make you address every little aspect of yourself that's not supporting your whole self and the planet. Is that accurate?
I think it is. I think the path of beauty is one where, you know, the chisel and hammer of the sculptor is the thing that you feel. And to me, the service is about beauty. It's about seeing that this world, that the purpose of creation is the expression of our highest capacities as beings, you know, to create something beautiful together, to experience that together. And sometimes the beauty shows up in the most unusual places, and we must acknowledge that that which we thought was horrible and ugly and not redeemable, in fact, carries the face of beauty. I remember a conversation with Marie Deans, a woman whose mother-in-law was murdered and who became an advocate of men on death row against the death penalty. And her journey